Hello, this is Abby.
Dear Abby, this is going to be a long one.
Oh boy.
Dear Abby, how do you tell the difference between a new exciting crush and a rebound?
Does it matter?
Dear Abby.
Dear Abby.
Dear Abby.
Welcome to our little corner of the internet. This is the Dear Abby podcast. I hope you stay and hang out with us. See you in a sec. Well, 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 look who decided to listen to my podcast today. Welcome back to another episode of Dear Abby. Okay, well, I am very excited to be back with everyone today. I have been really in a weird spot, per usual. Not per usual. Sometimes I feel really good, sometimes I feel really bad, sometimes I feel very medium. Life is what it is, okay? The more I resist my ups and downs and in recovery and just in life in general, the worse I feel and the less inner peace that I have. Why does that happen when you're talking and then all of a sudden it's like, it just like, it's like your throat's like, no more, like shut up, no more. And it just cuts you off. Nothing is worse for someone whose face gets red when that happens mid-conversation. You just have to play it off, even though you both know you just cracked or you did something like something weird with your throat happened. Or in that exact moment, you both realize that I'm like, you're a bit dehydrated. That's probably what's happening to me. What the frick are you doing right here? Knocked my bear out. Yeah, sure. Sometimes I think that my bear is my late dog for some comfort. What? Okay, fine. He's not dead. He's not a dead dog. He just is gone now with someone else. I couldn't take care of him anymore. I could if I really wanted to, but I just where I was living, my life situation. Okay, fine. This is what happened. I had a dog with my ex-husband. We bought a dog together. I am obsessed with that dog. Like, I still sometimes regret giving him away. When my ex-husband left me, that dog became my best friend and also an emotional, well, it was also my emotional support animal. Like, he had like a whole thing and everything. Little cute little ID card with both of us on it. It was really cute. I still have it. I will never get rid of it. But anyways, yeah, that's a fun fact. I had a dog and then my ex-husband left. I had the dog. I was not a big runner, but that dog needed a lot of exercise. He also wasn't very trained because he was like 2.5 at that time. And I had trained him like sit, lay down, stay, some stuff, but I've never trained him on walks. I was like, oh, he's my sole responsibility now. And I lived, you know, at home. My parents don't love dogs. My family doesn't love dogs. So it was very stressful. But I loved him. Like, he genuinely saved my life. And so I had him for a while. This has nothing to do with what we're talking about, by the way. This is just a segue. So, well, kind of, well, not really. Interesting fact. We'll have this as the, well, this will be the L for today. So we're just getting right on into it. Nobody wants to hear the, ooh, I hope everyone's having a good Thursday. No one wants to hear that. Doesn't feel very sincere when I say it, to be honest. I can't always want everyone to have a good Thursday. I don't always feel like I care that much, if I'm being honest. Of course I'd want everyone to have a good Thursday. I hope you're having a good Thursday. Oh, I had to say it. Anyways, I forgot what I was saying about my dog. His name was Rudy, by the way, and I trained him up on walks. He became like literally the best dog in the world. So trained, so good on walks. I could walk without leashes, even though I wouldn't do that unless we got to the park where that was kind of allowed. Everyone did it. He was not an aggressive dog. He was so sweet, so curious, and had so much energy. And we would walk to the park together every single day, sometimes twice a day. And we would play fetch for like a good old hour of him just sprinting. And I would throw that thing far because I had the little scoop thing. The scoop and youp, and it just became my best friend. But then there's a lot of life transitions, and mentally I wasn't in the best place to take care of a dog by myself. I also just couldn't give him with work and trying to provide for myself alone and just everything. I just couldn't provide for him the way that I wanted to anymore. And so I made the decision. It took a while to find a couple, but I wanted to give him to a couple who can give in more attention, you know, and more time outside, go on hikes, because I'm not really an outdoorsy, hikey person, but he's a dog that, like, loves the outdoors. He wants to go on long hikes. He wants to be outside more. And I was living in a studio that was small, a small, like, one bedroom. I was staying in a bedroom. And anyways, just not a lot of space. I made the decision, very hard decision, to give him to a couple that I had met up with a couple of times. And they were obsessed with Rudy. They, like, still send me pictures and videos sometimes, which I love seeing. Like, they're so in love with him. And they'll send pictures of him, like, in a field somewhere, like, with the wind blowing and his big floppy ears. He was a German Shorthaired Pointer. So if you know, you know. His droopy little mouth. And he just looks like he's having the best life. And I miss him. And sometimes I'm not kidding. I do pray and I ask God, just one day, if this is possible, can I just see him again? I don't need to have him. He doesn't have to be mine. I want him to run around in a field. I just want to play fetch with him again. Like, that's all I want. He can stay in his little doggy heaven in the big field with a bunch of other crazy dogs. But I want to be able to see him. And I feel like sometimes I just randomly think about him and I start crying because he was my best friend, but it just, like, felt like the right thing to do at the time for him. And now he's all trained up. He was given to someone else. And now someone else gets to enjoy my hard work, first of all. And second of all, they get to enjoy the sweetest dog who makes you fall back in love with life. So that's my dog saga. So yeah, this thing isn't the same, has no soul in it, but it's nice to cuddle with. It's also like an anxiety pillow, so that's why you see it. It's like has a weight on it. So sometimes if I'm alone and I feel anxious at night, I'll put the weighted bear on me and it just kind of soothes me and I'm able to breathe. But it's not the same as a dog. Nothing will ever be the same as a dog. I definitely want to get a GSP again because they're just so crazy, but they're so brilliantly smart. They're just perfect dogs. Wow, that was a weird segue into what we were talking about. Not a segue into what we were talking about. That was a weird intro, if I may. Yap, yap, yap. I'm yapping all day. Today, we are going to talk about lessons that I learned from my divorce. And it's not going to be probably what you think it's going to be, like some of the things that I'm talking about. I'm really just going to talk about some of the main life lessons that I learned and things that I feel like why it makes me, even though it was so hard and still, you know, sometimes things still, it's just heartbreaking, you know, that divorce happens and that people can be in love and then something happens and then it's just like gone, you know? It's a weird thing about life. It makes that more real that that's a possibility, which is really hard. But also at the same time, I have learned so many things about life, relationships, love, how to support someone who's going through something similar, and yeah, just a bunch of stuff. So I kind of want to talk about that because I saw a TikTok the other day, and I think I mentioned this, and she was saying, I think Chelsea sent me a video, and the girl was just like, why is it like kind of chic to be divorced in your 20s, you know, and just young divorcee? And I was like, I'll take it, because when it wishes upon anyone, it's heart-wrenching and scary and confusing. But I believe in a God that turns bad things into good things, and he doesn't discredit how hard it is, ever. I've never felt that, but he also, because of who he is, he genuinely can, I believe he can flip things to make them for our good instead. And he's like, fine, someone did this to you, let me turn this into a blessing. But it's not overnight, people. And it's not, I constantly feel like, oh, I'm so grateful for my divorce. That's not how I feel. But sometimes if I'm really reflecting and I'm kind of living the values that I learned and that I value, especially after my divorce, I genuinely feel so much more peace and joy. So we're kind of going to be jumping around a little bit, but it's kind of all on the same topics the whole time. Before that, though, I'm going to talk about my, well, I already talked about my L, which is getting rid of my dog. And then a dub. I've been trying to let myself enjoy things that I used to enjoy before chronic OCD. One of those things is Dungeons and Dragons. So I when I tell you the amount of intrusive thoughts and fears and weird scenarios that would come up in my head when I'd be at Dungeons and Dragons with my cousins and my brother and anytime we've played recently, because it's all like weird and there's always good versus evil, which is very triggering for OCD if you have like a morality thing or a spiritual thing or something like that. It's very triggering. Like, oh, if I was the bad guy or if I'm role playing as a bad guy or something, I'm like, oh my gosh, would I actually do that in real life? Like that type of a scenario. Very common and for OCD. And so the two didn't really mix that well. The last couple times that I played, I've tried to just accept, like, I'm going to be so anxious and I'm going to think that I'm the worst person on earth while I play this game. I'm going to think it's horrible for me, horrible, whatever, going to turn me into a bad person, yada, yada, yada. Okay, OCD. And then I just let myself have fun and I joke around, say some raunchy jokes to really trigger it. And it's always a blast. And I've been trying to watch more anime because I love anime. I've loved it since I was like a junior in high school. So it's been a long time. I've watched a lot of them and I've stopped watching them because A, my ex-husband used to watch them. We used to watch that together. That was like a thing. And so it was like a little bit weird to watch it after. It felt like I was like trying to be nostalgic, even though I wasn't. But then it's like, how do you not associate that? So I've been trying to get that back for a while now. It's kind of hard to make it feel like it's just you now, but that is getting there. But going back to Dungeons and Dragons, I thought of a scenario one time. My brother Clay, he's older than me. I don't know if he's single. I don't know, but he is very charming, funny, creative, huge imagination, and very analytical. So he's like the best dungeon master, I think, because he thinks about a lot of things and he doesn't care if he looks stupid, which those people are my favorite type of people because they don't care what other people think, or they're like, nah, I don't know. Maybe if they're insecure in their head, but they're still going for it. It just makes me feel like, oh, like I can breathe and relax and like just have fun and not take it so serious. Anyways, so he's great in that way because you want someone that makes you feel comfortable to like be goofy and whatever. Our last Dungeons and Dragons session, I think it was our last. We played with a couple friends. The whole premise of it was Chelsea's character got to be like the princess who was the next to be thrown, to be next to the throne. Wait, what is it? To heir. She was heir to the throne. And there was like this particular night, there was like there was a certain ritual or something that had to be done to save the kingdom, and only she would know the secrets because that's just what happens when you become queen over this land or fantastical world. So the whole plot was us trying to make sure that she got the things that she needed and the ritual went okay. She was able to do everything she needed to do to become the next queen and learn all of the family secrets, stuff like that. So we get to, whenever I play with my siblings or my friends, it is just, normally this is how it goes. There's a plot that probably Clay or the Dungeon Master wants us to follow. We probably get 20 minutes in and then the rest of the time is spent on stuff that probably was not planned because we're stupid. We like choose the wrong thing every time. We just don't get any hints, no matter how obvious they are. And then the whole time, Clay's probably trying to improv. Okay, well, how do I get this to close? You know, if it's a one shot, which is just a one time thing. So this one, I think we read a bunch of stuff wrong, or we were supposed to read something and we didn't read something that was given to Chelsea, which was a huge hint as to how to do the ritual right or something like that. And so we get to the end, we get to this certain room and where the ritual is supposed to take place. Shocker, shocker, there's a bad guy. Something happens, it doesn't go right. Chelsea's basically about to die. I don't remember what the trigger was, but something happened. Keep in mind, okay, this kingdom has been around for a long time. Lots of queens before Chelsea, okay? Lots of family secrets, lots of legacy, lots of the same ritual. It has to be the same ritual every 100 years, I believe, or 1,000 years or whatever, has to be done a certain way. Basically, we messed it up. Chelsea's ancestor, this queen before her, her grandmother, I believe, in spirit, came down and basically helped us win the fight when we were about to die. But it was the cutest thing because the way that it was explained had me and Chelsea both crying, because it was like Chelsea was so desperate for help, and then all of a sudden this angel came and then it saved us and it gave Chelsea a kiss on the cheek and said something sweet and like, you know, like, I've got you. And then she saved us all. And I love those moments in Dungeons and Dragons. I like movies. I do. There's something about maybe people that I know and love just actually being able to be a part of it, even if it's role playing in Dungeons and Dragons, to be a part of the somatic or the, you know, theatrical experience of these fantastical worlds, and having my brother explain all of these things that are happening, and he changes his voice and he has all of this imagination. It's all coming from him, like his brain, his imagination, him. And I love it. Like, I live for that stuff. When I played with my cousins, my cousin was a dungeon master. He was so good and he had things planned so well, and like, he loved it and I loved it and we all loved it. I will be getting into that soon, more frequently, basically, is what I'm saying. Long story, I know, sorry. But I think it would be fun to post something about playing Dungeons and Dragons, or maybe like a whole session, just to get everyone, if you don't play or if you think it's weird, to get you more accustomed to it. I'll get you. Don't you worry. That's what I said. Actually, I never said that. I was excited from the start. Long dub and a long L. Getting into the main part of the episode, which now I don't have a lot of time on, but that's okay. I regurgitate things all the time. Here are the main things that I learned from my divorce that have helped me in life. And I try to continue to remember those values moving forward. The first one is obvious, which is how to forgive, because of the situation, specifically with how the divorce happened. It was very upsetting. I was very betrayed. I was very hurt. I'm not really an angry person, but I mostly felt sad. But then sometimes I got whiffs of, like, not whiffs, that's sniffing, I don't know, surges of just being ticked off, like being so freaking mad. I've never really been someone to drop F-bombs, but I was dropping F-bombs pretty crazy. Yeah, I just was really angry. I didn't really know how to, like, immediately I thought, okay, yeah, I forgive him. Like, I forgive you. I think I told him that really soon after, like, basically while we haven't even been divorced yet, but we were like, okay, well, obviously this isn't going to work out. And it's weird because I've learned that forgiveness comes in waves. I grew up religious, having faith in God and Jesus, and something that I was taught a lot about was forgiveness and how you should basically turn the other cheek, type of a thing. And I was pretty good at actually forgiving people my whole life, even if they were jerks to me or whatever. This was a whole other level, obviously, of trying to learn how to forgive, because I was like, oh, I'm good at forgiving, so this shouldn't be hard. And then I realized forgiving was fully, like, letting that go and not having that be like a story or a narrative for me anymore. And that is what I learned about forgiveness, is A, it does obviously help the person forgiving. A huge weight is lifted off of my shoulders when, like, I was able to feel like I could let it go, and that's over there now. But a step further for me was really looking at the human part of him and how he hurt me, and recognizing the pain that he was in. He must have been in so much pain to do what he did to me, because I do think, I don't know, more people are in pain. I think sometimes in this world, and a lot of even podcasts or just like videos, YouTube, I don't know, just the way that people talk about each other, and someone does something bad, and I understand, like, I don't condone what he did at all. Obviously, I am the result of, like, you know, the pain of what that caused. But I do think for me personally, it's very helpful for me to be very realistic and okay, he must have been having so much pain to be able to even act on that. And that was not caused by me. So it's very unfair that now I have to deal with this. However, it does help me forgive people because I think we're all human. And this is just my thought process with it because I needed to think about it this way or I would have never moved on. I would be someone that I'd be talking. I mean, I talk about my divorce, but as in like I would bring it up in every conversation with everyone when I'm 40 years old, you know, 20 years later. I did not want to be like that because I didn't want that bitterness and that to like take hold of my heart. And sometimes I still feel like this pull to kind of play into the, I don't know, like victim or like, you know, life is so unfair. Why does everything happen to me? That type of a scenario or narrative, whatever. But then I just go back to like, the reality is someone did something very horrible to me. He is reaping the consequences internally with shame, guilt, probably regret. Maybe not now, eventually, I think. There'll be a little bit regret, hopefully. I'm not that terrible. I just think like they're already in so much pain. I never really got like a super sincere, I'm sorry. I think he was more manic most of the time or very not like, he was very disassociating, like, or not, I don't know. He was detached fully. But I genuinely don't think there's a lot of people who really, really just don't care at all. I think most people do care. And so they're already in so much pain. So I think holding on to something and then spreading that to other people is just causing more and more and more pain. I learned like I don't condone obviously any of those actions. Like I hope I would never do anything like that. And I do think that it's preventable by just like daily habits. I don't know. You learn that there's so much pain in the world and because you're in so much pain, but you also see someone else in so much pain. And then they caused you pain. When you see that and you witness that, you experience it, you understand it, you realize like, oh, it's actually so unhelpful and just a pain in the world to like hold on to it and then to project it. Like, it's like, I don't want to do that. I do not want to do that. Yeah, I'm really grateful that I learned that. It's something that sometimes I feel like, oh, how come I feel like angry again? Like if I see someone cheating, I'm not, if I see someone cheating, if I see like, jokes about cheating, sometimes it still triggers me. So I'm not like perfectly like, oh, and nothing, I'm unbothered. I think it's obvious that things are going to feel a little bit weird sometimes still. I'm still working through everything. Yeah, it's definitely a conscious effort to just like, I don't understand. I just don't want this in here anymore. So I'm going to give it to God, as they say, surrender it, fully surrender it, which is hard because you want to fix it so it never happens again. But I think the best way that you can fix it to make sure that you don't do the same thing is to like let it go fully, to just let it go. That's one thing. The second thing is, which I think we'll only get to two, maybe I'll do a second part next week. But the second thing that I've been thinking about a lot recently is about gossiping. This is something that I really tried my whole life. Again, something that I was taught and something that I now value more than ever because I understand it, is to not talk about other people behind their backs, not gossip. Everyone gossips a little bit, okay? I think most people do. It's something that I now internally makes me actually feel a little bit cringed, and I feel kind of sick when I hear people gossip about stuff. Gossip, just to be clear for me, is just when someone's speaking of someone else's pain. Like this is in my head, this is what I think of. Obviously, it's when someone's like just being a jerk to someone else behind their back, making fun of them, making them feel stupid, trying to look better because by like putting someone else down. But I also think sometimes it's talking about someone else's pain for your entertainment is what I like have seen a lot. Something for me that I realized was so painful was when people used I've talked about this before, but when people used my story as a way to psychoanalyze and a way to try to understand, well, what's wrong with her? What's wrong with him? What's wrong with this? And blah, blah, blah. And I don't know if it's a defense mechanism, if it's just like for entertainment, but it was extremely hurtful to me to be on the receiving end of it and just hearing little whispers. That taught me a lot, because that taught me, A, it's so sad and disheartening to feel like your pain and something that rocked your world in a bad way. I think rocking your world is good. That just shattered your world, okay? It's just being like whispered around behind your back, and it feels like everyone else is like gets to have a say in it, or everyone else, you know, it just feels like no one cares about you when that happens, because they don't in that moment. They're not like thinking about the other person. They're not being like conscious in that moment to be like, oh, is this the best thing that I could do for this person? No. There's a difference also between letting someone know, like, hey, just so you know, like they just got a divorce like a couple weeks ago, just so you know. So like, don't ask about like their husband or something. You know, I think that's important, because you don't make someone else look stupid or feel weird if they're like, oh, how's your husband? It's like, well, we just got divorced, you know, don't make me say it. I think that's different from like what I'm talking about with gossip. I really don't want to judge anyone that like does gossip or talks about that stuff. And in the way of like, I don't know. Sometimes I have a hard time because I notice things and I'm like, I don't like that internally. It makes me feel weird. But I don't want to shame other people or judge them for doing that. But I'm like, but I don't, maybe this is an OCD thing. How do I differentiate the intentions behind not wanting to do something? Like, I hope I'm not being mean if I'm like, so stupid. That's so stupid. No, it's just a value of mine that I've learned. Doing that stuff and talking about that stuff in those ways for me felt very vain. As in, it got you nothing. It didn't do anything for you. Like, it didn't fill you up. I learned that when I had gossiped, and when I sometimes now slip up, or if I don't know what to say, I'm like, well, maybe I'll just talk about, I don't know, like what's going on with this person or something. I mean, I don't really talk to anyone, to be honest, but I really try hard not to like even really talk about anyone unless it's positive and uplifting and true. And not like for entertainment purposes. I don't know. Even just drama, like pop culture stuff or something along those lines of just random drama about something that has really nothing to do with me personally. And the way that I'm talking about it is not helpful for anyone involved. When I do that, I realized I feel sick, first of all, doing that now. Because I think how hurtful for that person on the receiving end if they ever find out, whatever. But I also think about like, oh my gosh, like I feel like it toxifies my mind. Like it makes me, because I'm talking or I'm thinking about other people and their actions in the way of like, I don't know, just being hypervigilant or something, then I now feel like other people are doing that to me. So mentally, it makes me feel horrible. I get way more insecure. I feel like I'm walking on eggshells with everyone and everything. Like I have to be perfect. It makes me so scared to say the wrong thing because then people will judge me. Yeah, I really just have realized, honestly, I'm so much happier not consuming stuff that has nothing to do with me, especially when it's just for entertainment purposes, or I don't know, just to not focus on something that's going on with you. And again, this just has to do with the bad type of gossip where it's just like mean, you know, just kind of is nasty and mean and not helpful. It just makes me feel yucky now. So anytime I feel like people are maybe talking about other people, I try not to say anything, or I'll just like kind of like, yeah, like, so I just like sometimes don't know what to say because I'm not at the point where I'm like, hey, don't talk about that. Like, I'm not going to do that. But I tried to just not participate as much as possible. You don't realize how much you kind of put into your head with other people's stuff until you realize I don't want to do that anymore. And then you're like, oh, I'm like detoxifying my mind, which is so freeing. I don't know. I'm not like a chronic gossiper. And I wasn't really before, but it's even now I'm way more aware of like, I don't really want to be talking about this. 99% of the time, it's not going to be accurate information anyways. Then because you're assuming and you're judging and you are now have all this information that is probably false, now you have a skewed view of the world. You have a skewed view of those people. You're not like fully looking at the full picture. Then you have like a yucky lens, you know, and then you're holding on to that as you're going throughout your day. Rather than if you just like don't bother with that stuff unless it's presented in front of you in a healthy, safe environment where the person's there and you need to like comfort them and you really want to hear their story like from the source. Like that's so much more filling than just speculation, you know? Yeah, I don't know. That's just my two cents. That's what I've experienced. That's something that I really do hold like very tenderly in my heart, just to not speak about others in that way or not even really focus on that, to give people the benefit of the doubt, really try to understand people and to just, I don't know, just not focus on that. But I'm not perfect at it and I'm trying and yeah, we can all be better to make this world a little bit of a better place. Okay, let's do a Dear Abby and then we will round out this episode. Okay, you guys, I am feeling very, very excited and emo because this podcast is now made possible by No CD. You guys have heard me talk about No CD a million times in my podcast. I did therapy there. I go to support groups still to this day. And it's been such a huge part of my recovery journey. I couldn't be more excited about this partnership with them. NoCD offers effective, affordable, and convenient OCD therapy. NoCD therapists are trained in exposure response prevention therapy, which is a gold standard treatment for OCD. With NoCD, you can do virtual, live, face-to-face video sessions with one of their licensed, specialty-trained therapists from anywhere inside or outside the U.S. It's affordable and they accept most major insurance plans, so getting help has never been easier. NoCD therapy goes beyond sessions. It includes in-between session support where you can message your therapist anytime, access therapeutic tools, and get support from a community of peers who are overcoming OCD right in the NoCD platform. Breaking the OCD cycle takes effective treatment. Visit NoCD.com today and book a free 15-minute call with their care team, many of whom have also experienced OCD. If you think you may be struggling with OCD, there's always hope. Now is a time to regain your life. Visit NoCD.com today. And transitioning into advice mode. Dear Abby, I'm about to go on a date with a boy that I haven't figured out if I like yet. Ooh, very exciting. He has made it very clear to me that he does like me and wants to date me, but I'm still unsure. I've communicated this to him a bit, but what do you do when the other person wants to move faster than you? To add onto this pressure, I am at a Christian university that pushes quick dating relationships into marriage. Help. Love ya. Oh, love you too. A couple things come to mind. First thing, in this moment, say, I literally do not care what anyone else thinks about my relationship. Do not care about what anyone else says. Do not care about what anyone else thinks. If you can, mentally tune that out. It's like if there's radio stations going on, try to physically turn the volume down over that side of your brain, that noise. And then just focus on having fun on the date. Like if I don't, you probably have already gone because this was a little bit ago, but well, actually I think it was pretty recent. Yeah, this was only a couple days ago. So then once you have tuned that out and you just go on a date, maybe it'll bring you more clarity. I think I'm not a big fan of rushing things anymore for obvious reasons. I still think it totally can work when people rush into things. I think it just depends on how you mature together and if you both mature together and if you're both willing participants of, you know, changing and growing and learning together and for the relationship. I think if you have a really rigid way of thinking of relationships, it's probably not going to work. Unless you change those really rigid type of beliefs of a relationship should be this, it shouldn't be this, it's blah, 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 blah. Very Hollywood, you know, depiction of love. If you've already told him and he still is like, but I want to go fast into this, you can tell him, I feel really anxious about going into a relationship quickly or moving into marriage or whatever, like quickly. I feel like I would really appreciate it if you didn't pressure me and you just gave me time to figure it out on my own, because I could come to, you know, my decision of, yeah, I want to like, let's jump into this and let's just see where it goes in the next week or something, or the next couple of days. It might just click for you, or it might just kind of, I don't know, you just, it'll fall into place. That's my advice. Just communicate that in that specific way of saying, I feel anxious because of this. If you want to help support, then do this. And then also when it comes to feeling pressure from like a religious space, it's not, I don't think anyone's intent is to be pushy. I think most of the time their intent is good because they've loved being married and having kids. Like that's where they've found the most joy. Again, it's your life. They also had that, like they had that decision that was also their life. So this is your life and you can trust yourself. You can do what you feel internally like it's pointing you to do. So just take the pressure off. It's going to be okay. Whatever happens is going to happen. Just move forward however you think you can trust yourself. You'll find the person that you're looking for. And, you know, if you're open, if you're ready for a relationship, that's all you can do, you know? Or if you're not ready and you don't really feel like that's something that you want right now, that's also okay. I feel like sometimes when you meet your person, sometimes not, when you meet like your person or, you know, someone that you can't see a life with, you can make it work, then you just kind of, it falls into place. And even if it's not what you're looking for, it just happens. It's kind of what happened to me. I was excited to be single for a bit. Then I met my now boyfriend. I thought, I can't let him go. All right. Well, hopefully that was helpful. Send in Dear Abby's, people. Text me. Call me. Nobody calls me anymore. Nobody texts me. Call me, text me. The number is in the description below. No matter what you're listening, watching, it's in the description below. You can just text. It can be silly, serious, whatever. I need more of them. Okay, well, thank you guys for listening to this week's episode. I was all over the place as normal, so thank you for listening. And I will see you guys next week. If you want to support the podcast, you can like, subscribe on YouTube, comment down below. You can also leave a 5-star rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And you can also find me on Instagram and TikTok at DearAbby__, I believe. Thank you for listening. Have a good weekend. Bye. Oh, I'm taking a ride to join at late. I'm going to go to the house. I'm going to go to the house.